When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
You search much deeper within, through the way things appear. You're looking into my heart. I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made it. When it's all about you, it's all about you, Jesus.
Everybody, and thank you for joining us. Today we're going to do something a little out of the ordinary. We want to play some fast gospel songs that you can clap to, but with the recorder and the piano. And then we're going to play a contemporary classic.
Thank you.
To contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now we'd like to present you with part one of an interview with Jeff Funk. When Timothy was a chaplain with the Healthcare Chaplains Ministry Association, Jeff was the director. Jeffrey has also written a book on chaplaincy and pastoral care called Coming Alongside. In this interview, he discusses the book and a few experiences he has had as a chaplaincy director. We hope you will enjoy part one and come back in 2 weeks for part two. Thank you.
Everybody, I'd like to introduce Jeffrey Funk. Go ahead and say hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
He was the director of Healthcare Chaplains Ministry Association, where I was a hospital chaplain. And then he went to work on chaplaincy in California, in more central California. Isn't that correct, Jeff?
Well, I'm actually in Northern California. I'm north of Sacramento in a little community up here. And the main reason we came up here is our grandchildren are just 30 minutes from us. And they're our only grandchildren. And since our firstborn son died, you know, being close to family is really important to us.
Yeah, I would really imagine so.
So they're our only grandchildren. So we, 2 years ago, we moved up here to be near them, and we just saw God's timing and leading in all of that. So it's been a good deal for us.
So I was interested in what actually got you into the chaplaincy.
You know, like most things, it's a process. So my initial calling into ministry was actually when I was involved in agriculture back in the 70s. And
I remember something about that.
Yeah, I was actually on a combine in the barley field, and I was reflecting on the verse that talks about the fields are white unto harvest, but the laborers are few. So pray to the Lord of the harvest to send forth laborers into the field. Well, I literally was in a field white unto harvest. I was harvesting it.
So you're kind of like Elisha.
Well, I got really convicted that I was in the wrong field. Not literally the wrong barley field, but what was I doing with my life? I loved farming, but I felt this huge call that God wanted to do more with my life than simply being a farmer. So so that was the initial step. And then I was like, so now what do I do? So I thought I might mix my agricultural background with missions. So I graduated from college and went to Guatemala with the Central American Mission to get exposed to mission work in Guatemala. And then even went back the next summer. And it was like, yeah, that's, you know, missions is an option, but it, that's not for me. But I also recognized I needed further sharpening of my tools, and so I knew I needed seminary. So I signed up, went to Talbot School of Theology, and still didn't know what I really wanted to do. So I was thinking, well, my giftedness was in teaching and preaching, so the first thing you think of is, well, that's in church ministry as a, you know, a pastor. So I thought, well, that's where God's going to lead me. And I actually had an opportunity to pastor a church, and then it was like, yeah, that may not be the perfect fit. And also during that, I had been a funeral director. That's how I made my living while I was in seminary, and that actually continued on for quite a while, and I served as a lay pastor. And so that exposed me to grieving people and coming alongside and helping them work through their funeral arrangements and their grief from all different cultures, you know, different ways of celebrating that and doing that, and became very comfortable around death and grief. And then also in this mix was my firstborn son had major medical problems. And that wound me up in the hospital arena. And this was back when Children's Hospital in Orange County, there were no private rooms. You had four kids, four beds to a room. Uh-huh. And all there were, you know, some curtains, which weren't always drawn. And so there you were with three other kids and their families, and a lot of them were scared, and the stress of what they were going through, and they would watch my wife and I more relaxed and at peace. And so we would talk, and I would minister to them. And so in that process of my son spending lots of time in the hospital, and then I ran into a hospital chaplain who brought up, you know, when I was in seminary, chaplaincy, especially hospital chaplaincy, was not even on my long list. That was not even an option I had considered. So God needed to give me a little nudge. And so it was through all those things leading up, especially, like I said, my son's journey that made me pause and go, wow, that's a fit for me. I was so comfortable around sick people in that. So that was in 1990. I made the decision to go all in into chaplaincy and joined HCMA and did my training at USC Medical Center.
Okay, so just to fast forward now, as far as your book is concerned, you mentioned three different areas in chaplaincy. Can you talk about those and expand on those? I know we talk a lot about compassion, hesed, and that if you could, you know, expand on that, and then, you know, we can get to the others.
You know, for me, that is the foundation. That's the fundamental starting place, as far as I'm concerned, for why I'm involved in chaplaincy. It's the love and compassion that God is, basic character of God that he has shown for us in a hurting, broken world, and his desire for healing and mending. of lives. And yeah, that compassion that you mentioned, I didn't see myself ever as a chaplain when I looked at that role. I was like, well, that's not me. But I also realized that I cared about hurting people. So, you know, that's the bottom line. You love and have compassion for people who are in need.
If I could interject something, it's kind of like,
sure,
we love God because he first loved us.
Yes.
And so the love that he's shed abroad in our heart, we're able to dispense to others. Is that correct?
Yeah, see, and that's the whole, you know, you look at the greatest commandment, and it was to love God with all
mm-hmm.
you are, and then the natural result of that is that you love people. If you don't have love for God, you pretty much don't care about people.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the second point that kind of overlaps with this is the ministry of presence.
Well, that is part of being a chaplain, a caregiver, is that you're there. That's what we saw. One of the hardest things that we went through with our son when he would be sick in the hospital and all, our question often was, where is the church? We did not experience the church coming alongside us, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
That did not happen. One of those reasons, life-threatening illness is scary for people, especially people with kids. You know, it's so intimidating to come alongside somebody with something that scares you. If that happened to my kid, I'm not sure how I'd handle it. So they stay away. They don't come. And then the other is not only because it's scary, but what do I say? I don't know how to respond. And so they stay away because I'm not sure what to say or what to do. So I'm not there. So I always felt that was one of the motivations for writing the book, was to encourage people within the church, hey, you can do this. Like you just said earlier, Timothy, that because God first loved us, we can love other people. You're equipped, whether you think of yourself as a skilled, you know, caregiver, God has equipped us because he loved us and cared about us. And that's the whole point of 2 Corinthians, where we show compassion and comfort others. Why? Because God has comforted us. And so we just take that comfort and show it to other people. So that's happened in every person's life. And so everybody technically has been equipped to come alongside hurting people. It's just that's not in our comfort zone for most of us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's true.
So it's hard. So that was one of the motivations. Hey, here's some clues, some helps to maybe give you more courage to, hey, I can do this. I can come alongside somebody and hold their hand and listen to them. Again, like you said, it's presence. It's not about having the right words. It's about being
right
there.
Kind of like Job's friends when they were really being friends. They
yeah,
shut up
when they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their best job was when they were quiet. Yeah.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Before I go on to my other question on the third point, I wanted to ask you, do you have any special stories that stand out?
Well, as far as people coming alongside and not feeling adequate, my most dramatic approval of the lessons in the book, which was the core curriculum for the seminary class that I taught on pastoral care.
Oh, okay.
I had a student on the first day of class who sat back in the corner. His main thing was family therapy, more as a counselor. And one of the questions I asked at the beginning of each class is, why are you here and what do you expect to get out of it?
Right.
And his response was basically, this was a required course for those in pastoral counseling and stuff. So that was his answer. You know, well, it's required, and I'm not going to get anything out of this because it has nothing to do with who I am and what I do. So it was just basically like, I'm sitting here doing the time, but it's a waste of time. The last day of class, he came up to me and said, this was the most meaningful class I had while at
Wow.
I was blown away. I just said, wow, if I got through to him. Because what he realized is the principles of listening, the principles of caring about people, and the things that I shared based on the book coming alongside, was those fit in what he did with counseling families. And he saw that it could carry over, and that bottom line, love of God and love of people, that's what it's about. So that was one of those dramatic stories of people who think, well, that's not me. I'm not a chaplain, so my role is not a chaplain, so this stuff doesn't relate to me. Well, yeah, it does. if we care about helping people, it does.
Right. Have you had any feedback on the book, how it's helped people?
There's been a few of those. There have been some churches that have had like a pastoral care program for reaching out to their people. Often, I think of two that were very large churches, so a congregation bigger than a pastoral staff could handle. So they needed a team of people who were committed to visiting at the hospital and in homes and things like that. And there was a few of them that took the book on as the core for their training program for their pastoral caregivers.
Wow, that's neat.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah, so they found that it was very practical in giving them some tools for come alongside people who were, you know, having a hard time.
I hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.